The brow. I already have everything I want. He stepped around Tamlin as if he were a piece of furniture and took my hand. Before I could say goodbye, a black wind gathered us up, and we were gone. Chapter 11.
What the hell happened to you? Rhysand said before the Night Court had fully appeared around us.
Why don't you just look inside my head? Even as I said it, the words had no bite. I didn't bother to shove him as I stepped out of his hold. He gave me a wink.
Where's the fun in that?
I didn't smile.
No shoe throwing this time?
I could almost see the other words in his eyes. Come on, play with me. I headed for the stairs that would take me to my room.
Eat breakfast with me, he said.
There was a note in those words that made me pause, a note of what I could have sworn was desperation, worry. I twisted, my loose clothes sliding over my shoulders, my waist. I hadn't realized how much weight I'd lost. Despite things creeping back to normal, I said, "Don't you have other things to deal with?"
"Of course I do," he said, shrugging. "I have so many things to deal with that I'm sometimes tempted to unleash my power across the world and wipe the board clean, just to buy me some damn peace."
He grinned, bowing at the waist. Even that casual mention of his power failed to chill me, awe me.
"But I'll always make time for you."
I was hungry. I hadn't yet eaten. And that was indeed worry glimmering behind the cocky, insufferable grin. So I motioned him to lead the way to that familiar glass table at the end of the hall. We walked a casual distance apart. Tired. I was so tired. When we were almost to the table, Rhys said,
"I felt a spike of fear this month through our lovely bond. Anything exciting happen at the wondrous spring court?"
"It was nothing," I said, because it was, and it was none of his business. I glanced sidelong at him, and rage, not worry, flickered in those eyes. I could have sworn the mountain beneath us trembled in response. "If you know," I said coldly, "why even ask about it?" I dropped into my chair as he slid into his. He said quietly,
"Because these days all I hear through that bond is nothing. Silence. Even with your shields up rather impressively most of the time, I should be able to feel you, and yet I don't. Sometimes I'll tug on the bond only to make sure you're still alive."
Darkness guttered.
"And then one day I'm in the middle of an important meeting when terror blasts through the bond. All I get are glimpses of you and him, and then nothing. Back to silence. I'd like to know what caused such a disruption."
I served myself from the platters of food, barely caring what had been laid on the table. "It was an argument, and the rest is none of your concern."
"Is that why you look like your grief and guilt and rage are eating you alive bit by bit?"
I didn't want to talk about it. "Get out of my head."
"Make me. Push me out. You dropped your shield this morning. Anyone could have walked right in."
I held his stare. Another challenge. And I didn't care. I didn't care about whatever smoldered in my body, about how I'd slipped into Lucian's head as easily as Rhys could slip into mine, shield or no shield. "Where's more?" I asked instead. He tensed, and I braced myself for him to push, to provoke. But he said,
"Away. She has duties to attend to."
Shadows swirled around him again, and I dug into my food.
Is the wedding on hold, then?
I paused, eating barely long enough to mumble, yes.
I expected an answer more along the lines of, don't ask stupid questions you already know the answer to, or my timeless favorite, go to hell.
I only reached for a platter of tartlets. His hands were flat on the table, and a whisper of black smoke curled over his fingers, like talons. He said,
did you give my offer any thought?
I didn't answer until my plate was empty and I was heaping more food onto it. I'm not going to work with you. I almost felt the dark calm that settled over him.
And why, Feyre, are you refusing me?
I pushed around the fruit on my plate. I'm not going to be a part of this war you think is coming. You say I should be a weapon, not a pawn. They seem like the same to me. The only difference is who's wielding it.
I want your help, not to manipulate you, he snapped.
His flare of temper made me at last lift my head. You want my help because it'll piss off Tamlin. Shadows danced around his shoulders, as if the wings were trying to take form.
Fine, he breathed. I dug that grave myself with all I did under the mountain. But I need your help.
Again, I could feel the other unspoken words. Ask me why, push me about it. And again, I didn't want to. Didn't have the energy to. Rhys said quietly,
I was a prisoner in her court for nearly 50 years. I was tortured and beaten and fucked until only telling myself who I was, what I had to protect, kept me from trying to find a way to end it. Please, help me keep that from happening again. To Prithian.
Some distant part of my heart ached and bled at the words, at what he'd laid bare. But Tamlin had made exceptions. He'd lightened the guard's presence, allowed me to roam a bit more freely. He was trying. We were trying. I wouldn't jeopardize that. So I went back to eating.
Rhys didn't say another word.
I didn't join him for dinner. I didn't rise in time for breakfast, either. But when I emerged at noon, he was waiting upstairs, that faint, amused smile on his face. He nudged me toward the table he'd arranged with books and paper and ink.
Copy these sentences, he drawled from across the table, handing me a piece of paper.
I looked at them and read perfectly. Rhysand is a spectacular person. Rhysand is the center of my world. Rhysand is the best lover a female can ever dream of. I set down the paper, wrote out the three sentences, and handed it to him. The claws slammed into my mind a moment later, and bounced harmlessly off a black, glimmering shield of adamant. He blinked.
You practiced.
I rose from the table and walked away. I had nothing better to do. That night, he left a pile of books by my door with a note.
I have business elsewhere. The house is yours. Send word if you need me.
Days passed, and I didn't. Rhys returned at the end of the week. I'd taken to situating myself in one of the little lounges overlooking the mountains, and had almost read an entire book in the deep cushioned armchair, going slowly as I learned new words. But it had filled my time, given me quiet, steadfast company with those characters who did not exist and never would, but somehow made me feel less alone. The woman who'd hurled a bone spear at Amarantha. I didn't know where she was anymore. Perhaps she'd vanished that day her neck had snapped and fairy immortality had filled her veins. I was just finishing up a particularly good chapter the second to last in the book, a shaft of buttery afternoon sunlight warming my feet, when Rhysand slid between two of the oversized armchairs, twin plates of food in his hands, and set them on the low-lying table before me.
"Since you seem hell-bent on a sedentary lifestyle," he said, "I thought I'd go one step further and bring your food to you."
My stomach was already twisting with hunger, and I lowered the book into my lap. "Thank you." A short laugh.
"Thank you? Not High Lord and Servant? Or whatever it is you want, you can shove it up your ass, Rhysand?"
He clicked his tongue. "How disappointing." I set down the book and extended a hand for the plate. He could listen to himself talk all day if he wished, but I wanted to eat now. My fingers had almost grazed the rim of the plate when it just slid away. I reached again. Once more, a tendril of his power yanked the plate further back.
"Tell me what to do," he said. "Tell me what to do to help you."
Rhys kept the plate beyond reach. He spoke again, and as if the words tumbling out loosened his grip on his power, talons of smoke curled over his fingers, and great wings of shadow spread from his back.
"Months and months, and you're still a ghost. Does no one there care to ask what the hell is happening? Does your High Lord simply not care?"
He did care. Tamlin did care. Perhaps too much. "He's giving me space to sort it out," I said, with enough of a bite that I barely recognized my voice.
"Let me help you," Rhys said. "We went through enough under the mountain," I flinched.
"She wins," Rhys breathed. "That bitch wins if you let yourself fall apart." I wondered if he'd been telling himself that for months now. Wondered if he, too, had moments when his own memories sometimes suffocated him deep in the night. But I lifted the book, firing two words down the bond between us before I blasted my shields up again. Conversation over.
"Like hell it is," he snarled.
A thrum of power caressed my fingers, and then the book sealed shut between my hands. My nails dug into the leather and paper, to no avail.
"Bastard! Arrogant, presuming bastard!"
Slowly I lifted my eyes to him, and I felt not hot temper, but icy, glittering rage. I could almost feel that ice at my fingertips, kissing my palms. And I swore there was frost coating the book before I hurled it at his head. He shielded fast enough that it bounced away and slid across the marble floor behind us.
"Good," he said, his breathing a bit uneven. "What else do you have, Feyre?"
Ice melted to flame, and my fingers curled into fists. And the High Lord of the Night Court honestly looked relieved at the sight of it, of the wrath that made me want to rage and burn. A feeling, for once. Not like that hollow cold and silence. And the thought of returning to that manor with the sentries and the patrols and the secrets? I sank back into my chair, frozen once more.
"Anytime you need someone to play with," Rhys said,
pushing the plate toward me on a star-flecked wind,
"whether it's during our marvelous week together or otherwise, you let me know."
I couldn't muster up a response, exhausted from the bit of temper I'd shown. And I realized I was in a free fall with no end. I had been for a while. From the moment I'd stabbed that fey youth in the heart. I didn't look up at him again as I devoured the food. The next morning, Tamlin was waiting in the shade of the gnarled mighty oak tree in the garden.
A murderous expression twisted his face, directed solely at Rhys. Yet there was nothing amused in Rhys's smile as he stepped back from me, only a cold, cunning predator gazing out. Tamlin growled at me.
Get inside.
I looked between the two High Lords, and seeing that fury in Tamlin's face, I knew there would be no more solitary rides or walks through the grounds. Rhys just said to me,
"Fight it."
And then he was gone. "I'm fine," I said to Tamlin as his shoulders slumped, his head bowing.
"I will find a way to end this," he swore.
I wanted to believe him. I knew he'd do anything to achieve it. He made me again walk through every detail I had learned at Rhys's home. Every conversation, however brief. I told him everything, each word quieter than the last.
"Protect, protect, protect." I could see the word in his eyes, feel it in every thrust he made into my body that night.
I had been taken from him once in the most permanent of ways, but never again. The sentries returned in full force the next morning. Chapter 12. During that first week back, I wasn't allowed out of sight of the house. Some nameless threat had broken into the lands, and Tamlin and Lucien were called away to deal with it. I asked my friend to tell me what it was, yet Lucien had that look he always did when he wanted to, but his loyalty to Tamlin got in the way. So I didn't ask again. While they were gone, Ianthe returned. To keep me company, protect me, I don't know. She was the only one allowed in. The semi-permanent gaggle of Spring Court lords and ladies at the manor had been dismissed, along with their personal servants. I was grateful for it, that I no longer would run into them while walking the halls of the manor or the gardens, and have to dredge up a memory of their names, personal histories, no longer have to endure them trying not to stare at the tattoo, but I knew Tamlin liked having them around. Knew some of them were indeed old friends. Knew he liked the manor being full of sound and laughter and chatter. Yet I'd found they all talked to each other like they were sparring partners, pretty words masking sharp-edged insults. I was glad for the silence, even as it became a weight on me, even as it filled my head until there was nothing inside of it beyond emptiness. Eternity. Was this to be my eternity? I was burning through books every day, stories about people and places I'd never heard of. They were perhaps the only thing that kept me from teetering into utter despair. Tamlin returned 8 days later, brushing a kiss over my brow and looking me over, and then headed to the study, where Ianthe had news for him. That I was also not to hear. Alone in the hall, watching as the hooded priestess led him toward the double doors at its other end, a glimmer of red. My body tensed, instinct roaring through me as I whirred. Not Amarantha. Lucien. The red hair was his, not hers. I was here, not in that dungeon. My friend's eyes, both metal and flesh, were fixed on my hands. Where my nails were growing, curving, not into talons of shadow, but claws that had shredded through my undergarments time and again. Stop, 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 stop. It did. Like blowing out a candle, the claws vanished into a wisp of shadow. Lucien's gaze slid to Tamlin and Ianthe, unaware of what had happened, and then he silently inclined his head, motioning for me to follow. We took the sweeping stairs to the second level, the halls deserted. I didn't look at the paintings flanking either side.
didn't look beyond the towering windows to the bright gardens. We passed my bedroom door, past his own, until we entered a small study on the second level, mostly left unused. He shut the door after I'd entered the room and leaned against the wood panel.
"How long have the claws been appearing?" he said softly.
"That was the first time." My voice rang hollow and dull in my ears. Lucian surveyed me, the vibrant fuchsia gown Ianthe had selected that morning, the face I didn't bother to set into a pleasant expression.
"There's only so much I can do," he said hoarsely, "but I'll ask him tonight about the training. The powers will manifest whether we train you or not, no matter who's around. I'll ask him tonight," he repeated.
I already knew what the answer would be, though. Lucian didn't stop me as I opened the door he'd been leaning against and left without another word. I slept until dinner, roused myself enough to eat, and when I went downstairs, the raised voices of Tamlin, Lucian, and Ianthe sent me right back to the steps.
"They will hunt her and kill her," Ianthe had hissed at Lucian.
Lucian had growled back.
"They'll do it anyway, so what's the difference?"
"The difference," Ianthe had seethed, "lies in us having the advantage of this knowledge. It won't be Feyre alone who is targeted for the gifts stolen from those High Lords. Your children," she said to Tamlin, "will also have such power. Other High Lords will know that. And if they do not kill Feyre outright, then they might realize what they stand to gain if gifted with offspring from her, too." My stomach had turned over at the implication that I might be stolen and kept for breeding. Surely, surely no High Lord would go so far.
"If they were to do that," Lucian had countered, "none of the other High Lords would stand with them. They would face the wrath of 6 courts bearing down on them. No one is that stupid."
"Rhysand is that stupid," Ianthe had spat. "And with that power of his, he could potentially withstand it."
"Imagine," she said, voice softening as she had no doubt turned to Tamlin. "A day might come when he does not return her. You hear the poisoned lies he whispers in her ear. There are other ways around it," she had added with such quiet venom. "We might not be able to deal with him, but there are some friends that I made across the sea."
"We are not assassins," Lucian had cut in. "Rhys is what he is, but who would take his place?"
My blood went cold, and I could have sworn ice frosted my fingertips. Lucian had gone on, his tone pleading.
"Tamlin! Tam, just let her train, let her master this. If the other High Lords do come for her, let her stand a chance."
Silence fell as they let Tamlin consider. My feet began moving the moment I heard the first word out of his mouth, barely more than a growl.
"No."
With each step up the stairs, I heard the rest.
"We give them no reason to suspect she might have any abilities, which training will surely do. Don't give me that look, Lucian."
Silence again. Then a vicious snarl, and a shudder of magic rocked the house. Tamlin's voice had been low, deadly.
"Do not push me on this."
I didn't want to know what was happening in that room, what he'd done to Lucian, what Lucian had even looked like to cause that pulse of power. I locked the door to my bedroom and did not bother to eat dinner at all. Tamlin didn't seek me out that night. I wondered if he, Ianthe, and Lucian were still debating my future and the threats against me. There were sentries outside of my bedroom the following afternoon, when I finally dragged myself from bed. According to them, Tamlin and Lucian were already holed up in his study. Without Tamlin's courtiers poking around, The manor was again silent as I, without anything else to do, headed to walk the garden paths I'd followed so many times I was surprised the pale dirt wasn't permanently etched with my footprints. Only my steps sounded in the shining halls as I passed guard after guard, armed to the teeth and trying their best not to gawk at me. No one spoke to me. Even the servants had taken to keeping to their quarters unless absolutely necessary. Maybe I'd become too slothful. Maybe my lazing about made me prone to these outbursts. Anyone might have seen me yesterday. And though we'd never spoken of it, Ianthe knew about the powers. How long had she been aware? I thought of Tamlin telling her. My slippers scuffed on the marble stairs, the chiffon trail of my green gown slithering behind me. Such silence. Too much silence. I needed to get out of this house, needed to do something. If the villagers didn't want my help, then fine. I could do other things, whatever they were. I was about to turn down the hall that led to the study, determined to ask Tamlin if there was any task that I might perform, ready to beg him, when the study doors flung open and Tamlin and Lucian emerged, both heavily armed. No sign of Ianthe. "You're going so soon?" I said, waiting for them to reach the foyer. Tamlin's face was a grim mask as they approached.
"There's activity on the western sea border. I have to go."
The one closest to Highburn.
"Can I come with you?"
I'd never asked it outright, but... Tamlin paused. Lucian continued past, through the open front doors of the house, barely able to hide his wince.
"I'm sorry," Tamlin said, reaching for me.
I stepped out of his grip.
"It's too dangerous."
"I know how to remain hidden. Just take me with you."
"I won't risk our enemies getting their hands on you."
"What enemies? Tell me something."
I stared over his shoulder toward where Lucian lingered in the gravel beyond the house entrance. No horses. I suppose they weren't necessary this time, when they were faster without them. But maybe I could keep up. Maybe I'd wait until they left, and...
"Don't even think about it," Tamlin warned.
My attention snapped to his face. He growled.
"Don't even try to come after us."
"I can fight,"
I tried again. A half-truth. A knack for survival wasn't the same as trained skill.
"Please."
I'd never hated a word more. He shook his head, crossing the foyer to the front doors. I followed him, blurting,
"There will always be some threat. There will always be some conflict or enemy or something that keeps me in here."
He slowed to a stop just inside the towering oak doors, so lovingly restored after Amarantha's cronies had trashed them.
"You can barely sleep through the night," he said carefully.
I retorted,
"Neither can you."
But he just plowed ahead.
"You can barely handle being around other people."
"You promised!"
My voice cracked, and I didn't care that I was begging.
"I need to get out of this house!"
"Have Braun take you and Ianthe on a ride."
"I don't want to go for a ride!"
I splayed my arms.
"I don't want to go for a ride, or a picnic, or pick wildflowers. I want to do something, so take me with you."
That girl, who needed to be protected, who had craved stability and comfort, she had died under the mountain. I had died. And there had been no one to protect me from those horrors before my neck snapped. So I had done it myself. And I would not, could not yield that part of me that had awoken and transformed under the mountain. Tamlin had gotten his powers back, had become whole again, become that protector and provider he wished to be. I was not the human girl who needed coddling and pampering, who wanted luxury and easiness. I didn't know how to go back to craving those things, to being docile. Tamlin's claws punched out.
Even if I risked it, your untrained abilities render your presence more of a liability than anything.
It was like being hit with stones, so hard I could feel myself cracking. But I lifted my chin and said, I'm coming along, whether you want me to or not.
No, you aren't.
He strode right through the door, his claws slashing the air at his sides, and was halfway down the steps before I reached the threshold, where I slammed into an invisible wall. I staggered back, trying to reorder my mind around the impossibility of it. It was identical to the one I'd built that day in the study, and I searched inside the shards of my soul, my heart, for a tether to that shield, wondering if I'd blocked myself, but there was no power emanating from me. I reached a hand to the open air of the doorway and met solid resistance. Tamlin, I rasped. But he was already down the front drive, walking toward the looming iron gates. Lucian remained at the foot of the stairs, his face so pale. Tamlin, I said again, pushing against the wall. He didn't turn. I slammed my hand into the invisible barrier. No movement, nothing but hardened air. And I had not learned about my powers enough to try to push through, to shatter it. I had let him convince me not to learn those things for his sake. Don't bother trying, Lucian said softly, as Tamlin cleared the gates and vanished, winnowed. He shielded the entire house around you. Others can go in and out, but you can't. Not until he lifts the shield. He'd locked me in here. I hit the shield again. Again. Nothing. Just be patient, Farah, Lucian tried, wincing as he followed after Tamlin. Please. I'll see what I can do. I'll try again. I barely heard him over the roar in my ears. Didn't wait to see him pass the gates and winnow, too. He'd locked me in. He'd sealed me inside this house. I hurtled for the nearest window in the foyer and shoved it open. A cool spring breeze rushed in, and I shoved my hand through it, only for my fingers to bounce off an invisible wall. Smooth, hard air pushed against my skin. Breathing became difficult. I was trapped. I was trapped inside this house. I might as well have been under the mountain. I might as well have been inside that cell again. I backed away, my steps too light, too fast, and slammed into the oak table in the center of the foyer. None of the nearby sentries came to investigate. He'd trapped me in here. He'd locked me up. I stopped seeing the marble floor or the paintings or the walls or the sweeping staircase looming behind me. I stopped hearing the chirping of the spring birds or the sighing of the breeze through the curtains. And then crushing black pounded down and rose up from beneath, devouring and roaring and shredding. It was all I could do to keep from screaming. To keep from shattering into 10,000 pieces as I sank onto the marble floor, bowing over my knees and wrapped my arms around myself. He'd trapped me. He'd trapped me. He'd trapped me. I had to get out, because I'd barely escaped from another prison once before, and this time, winnowing. I could vanish into nothing but air and appear somewhere else, somewhere open and free. I fumbled for my power, for anything, something that might show me the way to do it, the way out. Nothing.
There was nothing, and I had become nothing, and I couldn't ever get out. Someone was shouting my name from far away. Alice. Alice.
But I was ensconced in a cocoon of darkness and fire and ice and wind, a cocoon that melted the ring off my finger until the golden ore dripped away into the void, the emerald tumbling after it. I wrapped that raging force around myself as if it could keep the walls from crushing me entirely, and maybe, maybe buy me the tiniest sip of air. I couldn't get out. I couldn't get out. I couldn't get out. Slender, strong hands gripped me under the shoulders. I didn't have the strength to fight them off. One of those hands moved to my knees, the other to my back, and then I was being lifted, held against what was unmistakably a female body.
I couldn't see her. Didn't want to see her. Amarantha.
Come to take me away again. Come to kill me at last. There were words being spoken around me. Two women. Neither of them. Neither of them was Amarantha. Please, please take care of her. Alice.
From right by my ear, the other replied, Consider yourselves very, very lucky that your High Lord was not here when we arrived. Your guards will have one hell of a headache when they wake up, but they're alive. Be grateful.
More. More held me. Carried me. The darkness guttered long enough that I could draw breath, that I could see the garden door she walked toward. I opened my mouth, but she peered down at me and said,
Did you think this shield would keep us from you? Rhys shattered it with half a thought.
But I didn't spy Rhys anywhere, not as the darkness whirled back in. I clung to her, trying to breathe, to think.
You're free, Moore said tightly. You're free.
Not safe. Not protected.
Free.
She carried me beyond the garden, into the fields, up a hill, down it, and into a cave. I must have started bucking and thrashing in her arms because she said, You're out. You're free. Again and again and again, as true darkness swallowed us. Half a heartbeat later, she emerged into sunlight. Bright strawberry and grass-scented sunlight. I had thought that this might be summer. Then a low, vicious growl split the air between us, cleaving even my darkness.
I did everything by the book. Moore said to the owner of that growl.
I was passed from her arms to someone else's, and I struggled to breathe, fought for any trickle of air down my lungs, until Rhysand said, Then we're done here. Wind tore at me, along with ancient darkness. But a sweeter, softer shade of night caressed me, stroking my nerves, my lungs, until I could at last get air inside, until it seduced me into sleep.
Chapter 13 I woke to sunlight and open space, nothing but clear sky and snow-capped mountains around me. And Rhysand, lounging in an armchair across from the couch where I was sprawled, gazing at the mountains, his face uncharacteristically solemn. I swallowed, and his head whipped toward me. No kindness in his eyes, nothing but unending, icy rage. But he blinked, and it was gone, replaced by perhaps relief, exhaustion. And the pale sunlight warming the moonstone floors? Dawn. It was dawn.
I didn't want to think about how long I'd been unconscious.
"What happened?"
I said. My voice was hoarse, as if I'd been screaming.
"You were screaming," he said. I didn't care if my mental shield was up or down or completely shattered. "You also managed to scare the shit out of every servant and sentry in Tamlin's manor when you wrapped yourself in darkness and they couldn't see you."
My stomach hollowed out. "Did I hurt any?"
"No. Whatever you did, it was contained to you."
"You weren't..."
"By law and protocol," he said, stretching out his long legs. "Things would have become very complicated and very messy if I had been the one to walk into that house and take you. Smashing that shield was fine, but Moore had to go in on her own 2 feet, render the sentries unconscious through her own power, and carry you over the border to another court before I could bring you here. Or else Tamlin would have free rein to march his forces into my lands to reclaim you. And as I have no interest in an internal war... we had to do everything by the book."
That's what Moore had said, that she did everything by the book. But when I go back,
as your presence here isn't part of our monthly requirement, you are under no obligation to go back.
He rubbed at his temple.
Unless you wish to.
The question settled in me like a stone sinking to the bottom of a pool. There was such quiet in me, such nothingness.
"He locked me in that house," I managed to say.
A shadow of mighty wings spread behind Reese's chair, but his face was calm as he said,
"I know. I felt you. Even with your shields up for once."
I made myself meet his stare. "I have nowhere else to go."
It was both a question and a plea. He waved a hand, the wings fading.
"Stay here for however long you want. Stay here forever if you feel like it."
I need to go back at some point."
"Say the word and it's done."
He meant it, too. Even if I could tell from the ire in his eyes that he didn't like it, he'd bring me back to the spring court the moment I asked.
Bring me back to silence and those sentries and a life of doing nothing but dressing and dining and planning parties. He crossed his ankle over a knee.
"I made you an offer when you first came here. Help me and food, shelter, clothing... all of it is yours." I'd been a beggar in the past. The thought of doing it now...
"Work for me," Rhysand said. "I owe you, anyway. And we'll figure out the rest day by day if need be."
I looked toward the mountains, as if I could see all the way to the spring court in the south.
Tamlin would be furious. He'd shred the manor apart.
But he'd locked me up. Either he so deeply misunderstood me, or he'd been so broken by what went on under the mountain, but he'd locked me up. "I'm not going back."
The words rang in me like a death knell.
Not until I figure things out. I shoved against the wall of anger and sorrow and outright despair as my thumb brushed over the vacant band of skin where that ring had once sat. "One day at a time. Maybe Tamlin would come around, heal himself, that jagged wound of festering fear. Maybe I'd sort myself out. I didn't know. But I did know that if I stayed in that manor... if I was locked up one more time, it might finish the breaking that Amarantha had started." Rhysand summoned a mug of hot tea from nowhere and handed it to me.
"Drink it."
I took the mug, letting its warmth soak into my stiff fingers. He watched me until I took a sip and went back to monitoring the mountains. I took another sip, peppermint and licorice and another herb or spice. I wasn't going back. Maybe I'd never even gotten to come back, not from under the mountain. When the mug was half finished, I fished for something, anything to say to keep the crushing silence at bay. The darkness, is that part of the power you gave me?
One would assume so.
I drained the rest of the mug. No wings?
If you inherited some of Tamlin's shape-shifting, perhaps you can make wings of your own.
A shiver went down my spine at the thought, at the claws I'd grown that day with Lucian.
And the other High Lords? Ice, that's winter.
That shield I once made of hardened wind, who did that come from? What might the others have given me? Is winnowing tied to any one of you in particular? He considered.
Wind?
The day court, likely. And winnowing, it's not confined to any court. It's wholly dependent on your own reserve of power and training.
I didn't feel like mentioning how spectacularly I'd failed to move even an inch.
And as for the gifts you got from everyone else, that's for you to find out, I suppose.
I should have known your goodwill would wear off after a minute. Rhys let out a low chuckle and got to his feet, stretching his muscled arms over his head and rolling his neck, as if he'd been sitting there for a long, long while, for the entirety of the night.
"Rest a day or two, Feyre," he said. "Then take on the task of figuring out everything else. I have business in another part of my lands. I'll be back by the end of the week."
Despite how long I'd slept, I was so tired. Tired in my bones, in my crumpled heart. When I didn't reply, Rhys strode off between the moonstone pillars. And I saw how I would spend the next few days, in solitude, with nothing to do and only my own horrible thoughts for company. I began speaking before I could reconsider.
"Take me with you."
Rhys halted as he pushed through two purple gossamer curtains, and slowly he turned back.
"You should rest."
"I've rested enough," I said, setting down the empty mug and standing. My head spun slightly. When had I last eaten?
"Wherever you're going, whatever you're doing, take me along. I'll stay out of trouble, just... please."
I hated the last word, choked on it. It hadn't done anything to sway Tamlin. For a long moment, Rhys said nothing. Then he prowled toward me, his long stride eating up the distance and his face set like a stone.
"If you come with me, there is no going back. You will not be allowed to speak of what you see to anyone outside of my court, because if you do, people will die. My people will die. So if you come, you will have to lie about it forever. If you return to the Spring Court, you cannot tell anyone there what you see, and who you meet, and what you will witness. If you would rather not have that between you and your friends, then stay here."
Stay here. Stay locked up in the Spring Court. My chest was a gaping open wound. I wondered if I'd bleed out from it. If a spirit could bleed out and die. Maybe that had already happened.
"Take me with you," I breathed. "I won't tell anyone what I see, even them."
I couldn't bear to say his name. Rhys studied me for a few heartbeats, and finally he gave me a half-smile.
"We leave in 10 minutes. If you want to freshen up, go ahead."
an unusually polite reminder that I probably looked like the dead. I felt like it. But I said, "Where are we going?" Reese's smile widened into a grin. "To Valaris, the city of starlight." The moment I entered my room, the hollow quiet returned, washing away with it any questions I might have had about a city. Everything had been destroyed by Amarantha. If there were a city in Prithian, I would no doubt be visiting a ruin. I jumped into the bath, scrubbing down as swiftly as I could, then hurried into the night court clothes that had been left for me. My motions were mindless, each one some feeble attempt to keep me from thinking about what had happened, what Tamlin had tried to do and had done, what I had done. By the time I returned to the main atrium, Reese was leaning against a moonstone pillar, picking at his nails. He merely said, "That was 15 minutes, before extending his hand. I had no glimmering ember to even try to look like I cared about his taunting before we were swallowed by the roaring darkness. Wind and night and stars wheeled by as he winnowed us through the world, and the calluses of his hand scratched against my own fading ones before sunlight, not starlight, greeted me. Squinting at the brightness, I found myself standing in what was unmistakably a foyer of someone's house. The ornate red carpet cushioned the one step I staggered away from him as I surveyed the warm wood-paneled walls, the artwork, the straight, wide oak staircase ahead. Flanking us were two rooms. On my left, a sitting room with a black marble fireplace, lots of comfortable, elegant, but worn furniture, and bookshelves built into every wall. On my right, a dining room with a long cherry wood table big enough for 10 people, small compared to the dining room at the manor. Down the slender hallway ahead were a few more doors, ending in the one that I assumed would lead to a kitchen. A townhouse. I'd visited one once, when I was a child, and my father had brought me along to the largest town in our territory. It had belonged to a fantastically wealthy client, and had smelled like coffee and mothballs. A pretty place, but stuffy, formal. This house was a home that had been lived in and enjoyed and cherished. And it was in a city. Part 2. The House of Wind. Chapter 14. "Welcome to my home," Rhysand said. A city. A world lay out there. Morning sunlight streamed through the windows lining the front of the townhouse. The ornately carved wood door before me was inset with fogged glass that peeked into a small antechamber and the actual front door beyond it, shut and solid against whatever city lurked beyond. And the thought of setting foot out into it, into the leering crowds, seeing the destruction Amarantha had likely wreaked upon them, a heavy weight pressed into my chest. I hadn't dredged up the focus to ask until now, hadn't given an ounce of room to consider that this might be a mistake, but what is this place? Reese leaned a broad shoulder against the carved oak threshold that led into the sitting room and crossed his arms.
"This is my house. Well, I have two homes in the city. One is for more official business, but this is only for me and my family."
I listened for any servants, but heard none.
Good. Maybe that was good, rather than having people weeping and gawking.
"Nuala and Caradwyn are here," he said, reading my glance down the hall behind us. "But other than that, it'll just be the two of us."
I tensed. It wasn't that things had been any different at the Night Court itself, but this house was much, much smaller. There would be no escaping him, save for the city outside. There were no cities left in our mortal territory, though some had sprung up on the main continent, full of art and learning and trade. Elaine had once wanted to go with me. I didn't suppose I'd ever get that chance now. Rhysand opened his mouth, but then the silhouettes of two tall, powerful bodies appeared on the other side of the front door's fogged glass. One of them banged on it with a fist.
"Hurry up, you lazy ass!"
a deep male voice drawled from the antechamber beyond. Exhaustion drugged me so heavily that I didn't particularly care that there were wings peeking over their two shadowy forms. Rhys didn't so much as blink toward the door.
"Two things, Feyre darling."
The pounding continued, followed by the second male murmuring to his companion,
"If you're going to pick a fight with him, do it after breakfast."
That voice, like shadows given form, dark and smooth and cold.
"I wasn't the one who hauled me out of bed just now to fly down here," the first one said, then added, "Busybody."
I could have sworn a smile tugged on Rhys's lips as he went on.
"One? No one, no one but Moore and I are able to winnow directly inside this house. It is warded, shielded, and then warded some more. Only those I wish, and you wish, may enter. You are safe here, and safe anywhere in this city, for that matter. Valaris's walls are well protected, and have not been breached in 5,000 years. No one with ill intent enters this city unless I allow it. So go where you wish, do what you wish, and see who you wish. Those two in the antechamber," he added, eyes sparkling, "might not be on that list of people you should bother knowing if they keep banging on the door like children."
Another pound, emphasized by the first male voice saying,
"You know we can hear you, prick!"
"Secondly," Rhys went on, "in regard to the two bastards at my door, it's up to you whether you want to meet them now or head upstairs like a wise person, take a nap since you're still looking a little peaky, and then change into city-appropriate clothing while I beat the hell out of one of them for talking to his High Lord like that."
There was such light in his eyes. It made him look younger somehow, more mortal. So at odds with the icy rage I'd seen earlier when I'd awoken. Awoken on that couch, and then decided I wasn't returning home. Decided that perhaps the Spring Court might not be my home. I was drowning in that old heaviness, clawing my way up to a surface that might not ever exist. I'd slept for the mother knew how long, and yet... just come and get me when they're gone. That joy dimmed, and Rhys looked like he might say something else, but a female voice, crisp and edged, now sounded behind the two males in the antechamber. "You Illyrians are worse than cats yelling to be let in the back door." The knob jangled. She sighed sharply.
"Really, Rhysand, you locked us out?"
Fighting to keep that immense heaviness at bay a bit longer, I made my way for the stairs, at the top of which now stood Nuala and Caradwyn, wincing at the front door. I could have sworn Caradwyn subtly gestured me to hurry up, and I might have kissed both twins for that bit of normalcy. I might have kissed Rhys, too, for waiting to open the front door until I was halfway down the cerulean blue hallway on the second level. All I heard was that first male voice declare,
"Welcome home, bastard!"
Followed by the shadowy male voice saying,
"I sensed you were back. More filled me in, but I..."
That strange female voice cut him off.
Send your dogs out in the yard to play, Rhysand. You and I have matters to discuss.
That midnight voice said with quiet cold that licked down my spine,
as do I.
Then the cocky one drawled to her, We were here first. Wait your turn, tiny ancient one.